The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to Too Jewish with Rabbi Sam Kohan and Friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Sue Hoffman of the Shefa Fund, a socially conscious way for Jews to invest and for grants to be made to good causes. We'll also visit with our maven on Israel, Danny Bobman, and visit with our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please contact us with comments at our email address, TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com. Too Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Southern Arizona's fastest-growing synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in Southern Arizona. We're sponsored as well by Jill Rich of Realty Executives, by Environmental Strategies, by Better Bodies, and by Janos Restaurants and the J Bar. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom and happy day after Hanukkah. As this 2003 year winds to a close, we thought about having a top 40 countdown of biggest Jewish musical hits of the last 12 months, or best jokes of the past year, or even top kvetches. But instead, we settled for a simpler course, more appropriate for a show with the artistic integrity of Too Jewish. Instead, we'll provide you with a little after Hanukkah glow from some leftover melodies of the Feast of Lights and Latkes, mix in some appropriate secular New Year's stories and songs, and try to make this a holiday weekend worth remembering for its own sake, rather than for all the good things that happened over last year. So to get us started by bringing some last Maccabean tunes from the recently departed festival, here's a classic Israeli melody for Hanukkah, sung by David Yacobian. We carry torches forward to bring the light of the Maccabees. Anu nosim lapidim. Anu Nosim Lapidim, an Israeli Hanukkah song. You know, to move from Hanukkah to the non-Jewish New Year brings up a conundrum. You see, this time of year, it's always an interesting question whether to wish people a Happy New Year or not. We Jews celebrated New Year's back in September, so it's a little redundant to do it again so soon. I usually settle for wishing people a Happy Secular New Year. After all, I don't know about you, but I'm not in a big hurry to feel 2 years older when I can settle for one. On the other hand, like it or not, it is almost 2004. And one of the great advantages to being Jewish is that if you made New Year's resolutions back at Rosh Hashanah for the Jewish New Year, and you've blown them already, as I have, you have a great opportunity to try again just 3 months later. It's like a Jewish do-over, another chance to fix what we've messed up or haven't gotten right in our lives. So this is a great time for New Year's resolutions, or even just for reviving the ones you made at Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Calls to mind the simple fact that all New Year's dates are completely arbitrary. After all, who exactly decided that January 1st should be the date we start numbering our days? In Jewish tradition, there are actually four New Years. Rosh Hashanah in the fall, by tradition the birthday of the world and the date from which our deeds are tracked and recorded. Tu B'Shvat, the New Year for trees in the dead of winter. The first of Nisan, the springtime month of Passover. And, in some accounts, Simchat Torah, the new year for our Torah reading cycle. All chosen for thematic reasons and all considered to be religiously connected. And all rather arbitrary, but observed that way for many, many centuries. So, what's so special about January 1st? Well, if you count the days, it turns out that if Jesus was a historical figure, and if he was born, as Christian tradition says, in Israel as a Jewish boy, on the eighth day after his birth, there would have been a brit milah, a circumcision, a bris. And in the unlikely event that he was actually born on December 25th, or the corresponding date on the calendar used in those days long ago, then his bris would have taken place January 1st, which makes New Year's Day actually Bris Day. I bet you never thought of it that way before. In any case, January 1st has a certain added fillip of importance in Jewish history, and our Jewish historical moment today explains why. It was on January 1st, 1863, that a 21-year-old Jewish telegraph operator in the War Department in Washington, D.C., named Edward Rosewater, originally Rosenwasser, was a witness to and participant in history. In fact, he was more excited than his boss as he bent over the keys of his telegraph machine that cold morning. For when Abraham Lincoln made his regular rounds at the office, he often spent hours hanging out there in the War Department in the comparative peace of the small office and away from all the job seekers and panderers in the White House. The president himself watched as young Rosewater tapped out the Emancipation Proclamation, which ultimately freed all American slaves. Although he never again influenced history in such a direct way, Rosewater later went on to a distinguished career as a journalist, founding the Omaha Daily Bee, and was active in state and national government. But on that New Year's Day long ago, he helped create freedom. A little-known fact of the Civil War, which I learned from my friend Dr. Jerry Robinson, is that there were six Jewish Congressional Medal of Honor winners in that terrible conflict. The highest military honor given by our country for exceptional bravery under extreme life-threatening conditions of wartime. The Medal of Honor winners were Benjamin Levy, Henry Heller, Isaac Gauss, David Urbanski, Leopold Karpeles, and Abraham Cohn. And if you've seen the movie Cold Mountain, which is out now, and its scenes of the Battle of the Crater, well, then you have an idea of the setting for Abraham Cohn's heroism in that terrible conflict in that particular battle. When we come back, we'll meet our guest, Sue Hoffman of the Shefa Fund, a fascinating institution that makes investing and granting money into an expression of Jewish ethics.
Environmental Strategies Incorporated was established in Arizona almost 15 years ago. They're a corporation that's very unique and has distinguished itself as one of the foremost environmental remediation companies in Arizona. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is also a full-service general contractor. The fact that they have two divisions affords their clients the opportunity to work with one contractor to deal with environmental problems as well as their building and remodeling needs. Environmental Strategies clientele range from single-family homeowners to multi-million-dollar Fortune 500 companies. So, if you're in need of asbestos abatement, mold remediation, or general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies at 884-1114. And, if you wish, ask for Ken Goodman, the president. He'd be more than happy to talk with you about your project. That's Environmental Strategies, 884-1114.
We are delighted to welcome Sue Hoffman, our guest on Too Jewish this morning. Sue is the Associate Director of the Sheffa Fund, one of the most interesting funding groups in the Jewish world today, maybe one of the most interesting in the world in general. She is a graduate of the Harvard's Kennedy Center of Government, who decided to go work for the good guys, has been at the Sheffa Fund since 1995. She's originally from Newton, Massachusetts, is a delightful person and an active and observant Reconstructionist Jew. I think she might define herself now. Sue, welcome to Too Jewish.
Thank you.
Tell us what the Sheffa Fund is.
The Sheffa Fund helps Jews and Jewish institutions to do justice and peace through their tzedakah. So by tzedakah, we mean both giving and investing. So we have opportunities for Jews to do tzedakah and do that through banking, investing, and also through giving.
You have a concept, the Torah of money. It's a very interesting idea. I don't think I've ever heard anything like it. Can you explain it?
Yeah, the Torah of money really means teaching, Jewish teachings about money that bring together Jewish values and social responsibility. So when we talk about the Torah of money, it's a spiritual practice of understanding that money expresses our values. Money is a tool, and money is the resource that we use to share with others.
When you began to get involved with this project, with the Sheffa Fund, you weren't particularly interested in the money end of it. You were interested in the social justice end of it. Is that true?
Yeah. And I've since been able to understand that because money is so powerful in our culture, and there's so many taboos about money, especially Jews understanding the history of money and anti-Semitism and the stereotype about rich Jews, that the more we can talk out loud about how we use money, what it means in our life, how we earn it, how we spend it, how we share it, that is really a very Jewish thing to do, and it's part of creating justice in the world, because you can't create equality, create justice, unless you can talk about how resources are distributed.
We will talk much more with Sue Hoffman of the Sheffa Fund a little later this morning.
When I started working out with Jeremy, I weighed 137 pounds and I had 29% body fat.
Barb talks about her experience with personal trainer Jeremy Price of Better Bodies.
After 12 weeks, I weighed 117 pounds and had 14% body fat. My energy level skyrocketed.
In their new private facility, Better Bodies makes it easy to lose your body fat fast.
Physically, I feel better than I have in my whole life, and my family and friends and everyone around me sees a big difference.
After just 6 weeks, Better Bodies promises you a better body, and individual programs start at only $39.99 a month.
At Better Bodies, it's a great atmosphere and positive and energetic and encouraging.
For a free personal evaluation, call Better Bodies at 975-7074.
You will definitely see results.
That's 975-7074 or on the web at betterbodiestucson.com. Temple Emmanuel, the largest and fastest growing Reform congregation in Southern Arizona, invites you to become a part of all the wonderful ways we explore Judaism. Are you new in town? Call us for a tour and an information packet. Like to know more about Judaism? From an outstanding preschool program and excellent Reform religious school to the finest adult education academy in the country, Temple Emmanuel offers contemporary Jewish learning with depth, authenticity, and creativity. Try our outreach classes and our hugely popular Taste of Judaism series. And if you're looking for the best Jewish music in town, this is the place. From our string quartet to our Avanim rock band, we include every variety of outstanding Jewish music available. Most importantly, we make Judaism fun and meaningful. Come join us at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road, Arizona's first congregation and the only full-service Reform congregation in Tucson. Call 327-4501 today.
We're in the midst of a series of Torah portions that tell the great story of Joseph, the most complete literary work in the Torah, and one of the most brilliantly plotted stories ever told. In this week's portion of Vayigash, the tale reaches its climax. Joseph has risen from slavery to become the master of all Egypt, at the time the wealthiest and most powerful nation in the world. And yet his past comes back to haunt him, are actually to visit him begging for food in the persons of the very same brothers who beat him and sold him into that slavery in previous week's portions. But this time Joseph has all the advantages on his side. He's rich and powerful, and they desperately need food from him. And perhaps most importantly, he knows who they are, but they don't know who he is at all. So Joseph begins a little cat-and-mouse game that teases and torments and even tortures his brothers, forcing the 10 angry men, his older brothers, to confront their own guilt. In Vayigash, Judah, the leader of the bad brothers, steps forward, accepts responsibility for his actions, and breaks through Joseph's resolve. And Joseph is finally reunited with his brothers. It's a compelling human tale. Here's a version of it in song and story from my father, Rabbi Baruch Kohan, called in Yiddish, Der Poretz. It's a little long, but it's a classic.
Anybody here speak Yiddish? Yeah? Listen, this is a story about a Poretz. Now, if you speak Yiddish, you got to check me on my definition of the word Poretz, all right? A Poretz is an aristocrat, yeah? A Poretz is a big shot, right? A Poretz is not a Jew. But once in a while, once in a great while, a Jew makes it to become a Poretz. And then you get a very strange result. I mean, it's kind of an odd combination. You remember Henry Kissinger? A Poretz. I mean, you know, the face is vaguely familiar, the accent you heard someplace before, but you're never quite sure what he's up to. The first time this happened in a place called Egypt to a man named Joseph. And this is his story, which I call the story of Der Poretz. Yosef Avinu is in Mitzrayim a Poretz geworden. Translation: Little Joe, he made it big in Egypt. Seine eigene Brüder haben ihn nicht gekannt, haben ihn nicht gekannt. Translation: His own brothers didn't know him anymore. They didn't dig him anymore. Und vor was haben sie ihn nicht gekannt? Why didn't they know him? Weil gut ist wie ein Poretz und rett wie ein Poretz. Ein Peitscher ist gestanden in der Mitte. Ois wie ein Poretz und rett wie ein Poretz. Unser Josele ist los abaden mit. Translation: He looked like a Poretz and he talked like a Poretz in a language that his brothers didn't know. He looked like a Poretz and he talked like a Poretz. That couldn't be our little Joe. Same story, second chapter. Amol is given in Eretz Yisroel schlechte Zeiten. Translation: There was inflation, depression, recession, and a general shortage of everything. The Brüder sind reingekommen in Mitzrayim, käfen Essen bei Yosel. Is er given hart wie Eisen? Translation: Now the brothers come down to Egypt buy a little food from Joe. But Joe was hard as nails. Hat sie gekannt und sie haben ihn nicht gekannt. He knew them and they didn't know him. But now listen, how could they possibly know it? I mean, here he was, with the beard shaved off, in this beautiful penthouse, completely overlooking the Nile, elegantly furnished in early on Gipachkin. And between him and them are standing the aristocrats, and the big shots, and the interpreters. And besides, like I told you before,
Erkul,
Yosela is the Zabadidin. Are you ready? He looked like a Boritz, and he talked like a Boritz, in a language that his brothers didn't know. He looked like a Boritz, and he talked like a Boritz, that couldn't be our little Joe. Finally, Joe himself couldn't stand it anymore. He said, send them all out. All the aristocrats, the big shots, the interns, send them all out. And he faced his brothers directly, and he spoke to them for the first time in Hebrew. And he said to them, I'm Yosef. Translation, Ich bin Yosef. Adavicha. Father's still alive. They looked at him, and they looked at each other, and they said, it can't be, but it is. Yes, this is our brother. They said, yes, you have a father, you have a family, you have an identity. Yes, they said, we know you now because you're speaking our language, of course. Oh, Davino Chai, oh, Davino.
The Poritz by Rabbi Baruch Kohan, The Story of Joseph, writ large. Outstanding chef Janos Wilder continues his weekly visits here on Too Jewish on behalf of Janos Restaurant and the J-Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Well, it's almost the end of the year, which means it must almost be New Year's Eve.
That's right. New Year's Eve is coming right up, and it's a pretty exciting time for us both at J-Bar and Janos. At Janos, we do a really special menu. It's a six-course menu, and you can pair it with wines if you want. We really blow out all the stops and bring in caviar and foie gras. We're using truffles, all the best ingredients, and the best menu that we can possibly imagine. At J-Bar, it's different. We do a four-course meal at J-Bar, but for the entire table. So we're doing four courses, and at each course, there are three different dishes that we prepare. You don't have to make any choices. You get everything.
Oh, I love not having to make choices.
Makes it easy for you and fun for us, too.
Should be a wonderful New Year's Eve at Janos and the J-Bar.
Well, I hope to see you there, Rabbi.
I'll sure try. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. And for everyone else, please give us a call at 615-6100 to make your reservations.
When we return, we'll have the old Jewish joke of the week. And hear from our mavens, Danny Bobman and Tom Price.
Every once in a while, you want a different sort of day. A day you can be transported in a comfortable coach bus, partake in a wonderful luncheon, and see a show you'll truly enjoy, like Showboat. Min will take you on a journey of pure delight. For entertainment trips to Mesa, Globe, and elsewhere, call Min at 296-1190. The delightful musical Showboat will be performed on the 25th of February in Mesa, Arizona. It's $60 for the whole experience, including the bus, the meal, and the show. Call Min at 296-1190. Ask about their Apache Gold overnight trip, too. It's to enjoy. Call Min at 296-1190.
It's time for the old Jewish jokes of the week. Humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. So, three Jewish mothers are sitting on a park bench. One of them says, "Oy." The second one says, "Oy vey." And the third one says, "Oy vey Izmir." Then she turns to the other two and says, "But enough about the children." And there's the classic question. How many Jewish mothers does it take to screw in a light bulb? None. Never mind. I'll sit in the dark. Those were the old Jewish jokes of the week. Humor your Bubby and Zadie knew. A special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. If you have questions, comments, or criticism, send it all to us at TooJewishRadio@Yahoo.com. We promise to write back. You can get CDs of any and all past Too Jewish shows for a nominal cost by calling Temple Emmanuel at 327-4501 or on the web at TempleEmmanuelTucson.org. Okay, I fibbed earlier. Here's a truly final Hanukkah song, a Yiddish song called Oyer Kleine Lichtelach, with an English lyric sung by Rabbi and cantor Baruch Kohan.
All you little candles bright, tell your tales again tonight. Stories we all know of courage and of bravery, saving us from slavery. Tales of long ago, tales of long ago. Shine for us tonight again. Tell us we are right again. Fight the cruel decree. We'll be contradictory and seal it with a victory. For I'm a Maccabee. I'm a Maccabee. Tief in Harz bavek de stor, steht den Wunder klärt men nor, die Zochen sie zum Gut, die Zochen sie zum Gut.
Our final Hanukkah song of the year from Baruch Kohan. When we come back, we'll talk with Danny Bobman, our maven on Israel, and get the news of Jews around the world.
At Temple Emmanuel Preschool, they really have fun.
Aleph, bet, vet.
Aleph, bet, vet.
Gimel, aleph, hey.
Gimel, aleph, hey.
At Temple Emmanuel Preschool.
Temple Emmanuel Preschool.
We learn and play all day.
We learn and play all day.
At Temple Emmanuel Preschool, children are welcome from 6 weeks to pre-kindergarten. We've got small class sizes with a low student-to-teacher ratio. Our professional staff is highly trained and nurturing, and the school offers an all-day extended program with a rich learning curriculum including science, art, music, and dance. Of course, Temple Emmanuel Preschool is open to community members of all faiths. We invite you to come for a visit anytime. Just call Lynn or Melissa at 325-0390. Remember, at Temple Emmanuel Preschool,
we learn and play all day.
Temple Emmanuel Preschool on Country Club just north of Broadway. Call 325-0390 or go to TempleEmmanuelTucson.org. So, here you are, enjoying your Sunday morning with Rabbi Sam Kohan, his mavens, and his friends. Isn't it great hearing the variety of in-depth interviews, the traditional and not-so-traditional Jewish music, the news of Jews around the world, and of course the wit and humor that you've come to expect? You know, producing Too Jewish is a labor of love, but we do need your help. We'd like to ask your business to consider advertising right here within our show. By advertising here, you'll reach an educated, affluent audience, an audience that's loyal. It's easy and inexpensive to advertise on Too Jewish. Just call 327-4501. Your call will help guarantee that Too Jewish remains a source for the best of Jewish culture. Please call today, 327-4501. 327-4501. And thanks from your friends right here at Too Jewish.
Our maven on Israel, the dynamic Danny Bobman, is here to talk about Israeli culture, specifically music. Boker Tov, Danny.
Good morning, Rabbi. Coming in today, I reflected on the Rami Kleinstein concert we held a few weeks ago. After the concert, people came up to me to say how much they enjoyed the music. Some asked me this question: what is it with Israelis that they have to sing along with the singer? That kept me thinking for a while. It's a fact that I didn't pay attention to, but now I'm compelled to give it some kind of explanation. Public singing is nothing new to Jewish people. In fact, it is not uncommon in many traditions, dating back to ancient ceremonies, all the way through religious chanting, praying, and as a form of public expression in many people's history. I'm no expert in that field, but I'd like to try and highlight the uniqueness of Israeli public singing in Hebrew. Raised in the first kibbutz, I witnessed some of the most sweeping expressions of public singing. Every holiday, after the official ceremony and the meal were over, people gathered in the dining hall around the cleared tables. There was always someone with accordion presence, and the spontaneous singing would spark into the night. This tradition would intensify especially at the eve of Yom HaAtzmaut, Israel's Independence Day. That night, the public singing would last until 4, 5 in the morning. We used to quantify how joyful was the holiday by the number of hours we stayed up singing and the number of members and guests who lasted till we called it quits. The songs we sang were mostly a collection of Hasidic tunes, popular motivational hits from the school of Zionist youth movements, many were Hebrew words to Russian revolutionary melodies, and the ever-popular military-associated songs. These were the same songs that described the history of the making of Israel. The Hasidic tunes were brought by the Chalutzim who defied old formal religion but could not live without the tunes from Papa's Shul, which they chanted on the dirt roads they turned into highways. The Russian songs that reflected the social revolution as well as the individual yearnings to Mother Russia became the new prayers, and everybody sang along as if in massive outdoor temple. The louder you sang, the easier it will be for you to forget your parents' home, which you left so very young. They never did forget, since they kept on singing the old songs every chance they had. And then there were the new Hebrew songs, composed by the pioneers of the reviving Hebrew language. The new songs were taught in the fields, around the bonfire, and in the public gatherings. These songs were one of the methodologies used to teach Hebrew. Like troubadours, the composers would teach their newly written songs, sometimes to a familiar old country melody, sometimes a new Israeli tune, by wandering between the workers' camps, armed with their notes and occasionally a musical instrument. Learning the new songs was considered a mitzvah, a commandment, and it was unholy not to participate. If you did not know the new Hebrew songs, you were sabotaging the entire Zionist effort and may be banned by your friends. I think this was the beginning of how public Hebrew singing became an essential part of living in Israel. There is more I want to say about that, so if you don't object, Rabbi, I would come back to Hebrew public singing on your next show. Until then, have a good week.
Thanks, Danny, and Shavua Tov. We'll continue the conversation on Israeli music next week when our guest will be Israeli singer-songwriter Rami Kleinstein. Our Jewish poetry slam this morning comes from Rabbi Benzion Boxer. It's called Start Your Day with Gratitude. I did not make the air I breathe, nor the sun that warms me. I did not endow the muscles of hand and brain with the strength to plow and plant and harvest. I know I am not a self-made man. Start Your Day with Gratitude, a poem by Rabbi Benzion Boxer. When we return, we'll talk to Tom Price about the international Jewish scene and get the news of Jews around the world.
If you're like most people, your biggest purchase is your home. Don't you wish there was someone you could turn to who not only had knowledge and experience, but who truly cared about you? If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you need to know Jill Rich. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. With over 20 years of experience, Jill's one of Tucson's top realtors. She specializes in all kinds of residential property. She can find you a starter house or a castle. Jill will find you the perfect home. While the stock market has wild gyrations, real estate grows in value. If you want to invest in income property, Jill can guide you. And if you're thinking about selling your home, Jill provides a personal marketing program to sell your house fast. You can reach Jill Rich at Realty Executives River Road Office, 615-8400. Jill provides strong representation in a caring way. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. Jill Rich, call 615-8400.
We're delighted to welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, a continuing series on Hanukkah having to do with the Greek and Jewish contrast of civilizations. Tom, last week we spoke about the challenge that Greek thought posed for Judaism and something of the attraction of it. Maybe we could focus a little more on the attraction and also the fear that led to the Maccabean revolt itself today.
Well, that's a challenging question, Rabbi.
Only challenging on Too Jewish.
When Greek civilization first began to develop, Jewish history and culture were already ancient and very well established, particularly in the land of Israel, but also in some of the oldest communities in the diaspora, in Persia, in Babylon, et cetera, et cetera. Now, when the Greeks first began to be confronted by an expanding Roman Empire, they solved the problem of Roman expansionism by submitting to the Romans physically, but taking over intellectually. Culturally speaking, the Roman Empire was Greek. Educated people spoke and wrote in Greek. The Greeks set the standards in art, architecture, drama, which is a Greek word, music, literature, philosophy, another Greek word. Even the Roman pantheon consisted of gods who were Greek gods given new Latinized names. The Jews, on the other hand, refused to submit to this sort of cultural domination. And by the time that the Romans took over in the land of Israel, there were as many Jews as there were Greeks in the Roman Empire, and a greater percentage of them were literate. But the Greeks, nonetheless, showed no signs of interest or respect for Greek culture, and this led to a constant tension between the two populations. The Jews had this attraction about which they were very ambivalent to Greek culture. The Greeks had total disdain for Jewish culture. Many historians see all the Jewish revolts against Roman rule, which came a little bit later than the Maccabees, as at bottom revolts against Greek influence and sort of a racial cultural conflict between Jews and Greeks. The anti-Hellenism, which characterized Jewish literature from the second century BCE onwards, was fully reciprocated. And after the Maccabean revolt, Antiochus swore to abrogate Jewish laws as being, quote, inimical to humanity, and he sacrificed swine over Jewish sacred books. A few years later, one of his successors, another Antiochus, was told by his advisors that, quote, Jerusalem should be destroyed and the Jewish people annihilated because they were the only people on earth who refused to associate with the rest of humanity, close quotes. In other words, who refused to subscribe wholeheartedly to Greek values. So the Maccabean revolt wasn't enough. The Greeks continued to push, and the Romans later tried to push also Greek values, which essentially were their values.
And that meant that because Jews didn't accept the essential qualities of a society based on the theater and the gymnasium and philosophy and didn't turn aside from their religious practices, that it was going to be a constant conflict through history.
Right.
Tom, thanks very much for that great summary of everything that led to Hanukkah. And a happy secular new year.
And the same to you.
Shana Tova. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
After a day of meetings with Israel's leaders, Egypt's foreign minister, Ahmed Maher, was heckled and then set upon Monday by a group of about 20 Islamic, well, radicals, inside Al-Aqsa Mosque, one of Islam's holiest sites. While Maher suffered no serious injuries, the episode reflected the tensions surrounding efforts to restart peace talks. With Egypt now taking a lead role, Maher has had increased contacts with Israeli officials, including Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, which makes him a target for some of the radical Islamic terrorist groups. As Maher entered the mosque to pray, he was immediately surrounded by the men, members of the Islamic Liberation Party, a small group known more for its deeply conservative religious beliefs than for its terrorism. The protesters immediately began calling Maher a traitor and throwing shoes at him, a particularly deep insult in the Muslim world. The men then began jostling the entourage surrounding Maher. No word on what kind of shoes they threw. The Egyptian emissary appeared panicked, short of breath, and near collapse amid the clamor. I'm going to choke, witnesses reported him saying. The Israeli police went inside to assist Maher's bodyguards in removing the minister. Maher, 68 years old, was taken to an Israeli hospital for an exam. He was released a few hours later. The Palestinian Authority, led by Yasser Arafat, denounced the attack. In Colombia, South America, on Monday, National Liberation Army rebels released four Israelis and a Briton they had kidnapped 102 days ago, handing them over to a church-led humanitarian commission. Israelis Benny Daniel, Ido Guy, Erez Altawil, and Orpaz Ochayon, and Briton Mark Henderson appeared to be in good health as they boarded a military helicopter in the northern Sierra Nevada mountains, Israeli ambassador to Colombia Yair Recanati said. They were all flown to a military airport in Bogota, where they were welcomed by their families and embassy representatives. Later in the day, the four Israelis were taken to the Israeli embassy in the Colombian capital, where they celebrated their release and the Jewish festival of Hanukkah by lighting the fourth candle on the menorah. The four told their parents that they had held on and survived for their families. Foreign Minister Sylvain Shalom issued a statement expressing Israel's gratitude to the government of Colombia and President Alvaro Uribe and the church figures who negotiated the release. The release of the hostages during Hanukkah, Shalom added, adds light and joy to every home in Israel. I hope the families who have been reunited with their loved ones will return to us and light the last Hanukkah candle here at home in Israel. And in news you just can't really believe is true, I must tell you that, my friends, according to most counts, there are 193 countries in the world. No, that's not the hard-to-believe part. Here it is. Out of all these many, many countries, which one has the fastest-growing Jewish population in the world? Guess again. Believe it or not, it's Germany. A recent survey shows that as of this moment, more or less, there are 100,000 Jews in Germany, spread throughout 81 Jewish communities, and Jewish leaders forecast there will be a third more within 2 years, about 130,000. To say the least, this is slightly startling in view of the fact that it was Germany who created, implemented, and was mostly responsible for the Holocaust that murdered 6 million Jews. Jews from the former Soviet Union are attracted to Germany by its more robust economy and superior living standards. In fact, Germany has certainly come to terms with its Nazi past in a much more open and honest way than such paragons of denial as Austria, Latvia, or the Ukraine. Still, it's very strange to think about thousands of Jews voluntarily choosing to move to their Führer's homeland in the 21st century. How soon even we forget. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back Sue Hoffman, the Associate Director of the Shefa Fund. That's one of the most interesting funding groups that both invests and distributes funds to help in social justice work, and perhaps the most interesting one that I've ever heard of. Sue has been at the Shefa Fund since 1995. She's a graduate of the Harvard Kennedy Center of Government, who determined that social justice work was central to her life and has made it an expression of her professional work ever since. She's originally from Newton, Massachusetts, who lives in Philadelphia now. We're delighted to welcome back Sue Hoffman. Sue, a tzedakah bank, explain what that is.
It's a place where Jewish individuals and institutions can literally bank the money that they want to give away later. So people can contribute money to the Shefa Fund and then over time get advice about how to distribute it.
What are some of the projects that the Shefa Fund has supported over the last few years?
Our expertise is in Middle East peace and also in Jewish involvement in social and economic justice. So as an example, the National Interfaith Committee for Worker Justice provides religious institutions with resources to help in labor movements with farm workers who are encountering health and safety problems on the job. The whole issue of low-wage workers is really a problem in our society. And the National Interfaith Committee for Worker Justice offers Jewish communities and other religious communities the resources to do something about it.
What makes an issue a Jewish issue for you?
That's really a fantastic question and a challenging one. Because for me, the core of Judaism is about treating people fairly and having a covenant so that we covenant to create a just community with each other. So the issues that are Jewish issues to me have to do with how we covenant with each other across race, class, ethnicity, economics, and also how we covenant with the earth, with our environment. So all of the issues that are called progressive issues, for me, are all Jewish issues because of the issue of covenant.
You have funded the Israeli group B'Tselem. You want to explain what their work is? You talked about the involvement in Middle East peace work.
Sure. Besides economic and social justice in the U.S., we also support the peace movement in Israel. And part of the peace movement is bearing witness to what's going on there and to issues of human rights. B'Tselem is the premier human rights organization in Israel. Rabbis for Human Rights is also a human rights group. ACRI is another human rights group. And we support all three of them. Because it's very important to have that faith-based perspective, to have Jews who care deeply about Israel and the survival of Israel to also be speaking out about human rights. And it could be the human rights of Palestinians, it could be the human rights of foreign workers in Israel.
Is it ever the human rights of, for example, Jews from Ethiopia or Sephardic Jews, Moroccan Jews in Israel?
B'Tselem does care about those things as well. And the Shefa Fund has also funded Ethiopian Jews in Israel who are among the most disadvantaged groups there.
Do you have non-Jews that participate in the Shefa Fund?
Only incidentally. There is. We've had one campaign to help Rabbis for Human Rights and to plant olive trees. And so there were some non-Jews and some church groups who actually contributed to that campaign. But we focus on the Jewish community.
Planting of olive trees was in response to the Israeli military knocking down olive trees, sometimes as a punishment measure against Palestinians.
Yes.
We talked earlier, privately, before we went on the air, about the way that people see money. And you mentioned it earlier in the program. Tell me how your perception of money is different from the way many rabbis, for example, or Jews think about funds or think about money.
Yeah. In our culture, because we live in American culture where money buys us lots of things, we don't think of money as spiritual or as connected to our deepest selves. We think of money as...
He who dies with the most toys wins, that kind of thing.
Right. And so accumulation can be really idolatrous in our society. So to re-examine the place of money and things in our lives is really a spiritual issue. And to think about money as that dirty thing we have to think about because we need it to get things done is also not helpful to an integrated spiritual life. So I like to think about money as a resource, like time and skills and talents. Money is a resource to get to a place you want to get to a place of justice, to get to a place of security. And that's a really different way to think about money.
Is there ever a sense of irony when people with significant amount of funds, which is, of course, the kind of people who would be investing with the Shefa Fund, decide that they want to create social justice when you know that they've accumulated those funds in large business dealings that may not have anything to do with social justice?
Yeah, we live in a society where you can't avoid those contradictions. How we earn money, we don't always have control over. What we need to spend it on, we don't always have control over, or we make all kinds of different choices. And so the folks who bank with the Shefa Fund, who use the Shefa Fund as a charitable tool, mostly have inherited the money, but they may have earned it in a variety of ways. And the good thing is that they are doing something with those earnings. They're setting aside a significant portion of their wealth to do good.
In Maimonides' Degrees of Charity, among the highest levels of charity are those that enable people to make a living for themselves. You know, the old Chinese proverb, give a man a fish, he eats for a day, teach a man to fish, he eats for a lifetime. And in Judaism, we use gefilte fish, but the same idea. Is that sort of the notion of the Shefa Funds project?
That's exactly it. Sure. Maimonides' eighth degree of tzedakah is self-sufficiency, is partnership with somebody who needs help economically, and that's what our Tzedek investment program is all about. We call it the Tzedek Economic Development Campaign, and that's the campaign that helps Jews do the community investing that really can help.
How much money is required to invest in the Sheva Fund? What's your minimum?
Right now, we have an $18,000 minimum, but within a year, we will be able to accept as little as $1,000. And we're in the process of trying to develop a way to accept smaller amounts of money. It takes a lot of transactions, means a lot more time on our part.
So we have to
raise the money to operate a program that can accept smaller loans. But right here in Tucson, without investing in the Sheva Fund, you could invest directly in the community development financial institution locally. And then the Sheva Fund can publicize that and encourage others to do the same.
We have a social action program at Temple Emanuel. We have, I think, 12 or 15 different projects going often simultaneously. And there's an interesting reserve, where you and I were talking about it privately earlier, where people that are active in social action don't particularly want it publicized, because they're doing it because it's the right thing to do. It's tzedek. It's a creation of justice rather than something that they want praise for.
Mm-hmm.
How do you respond to that?
Well, I think that we don't have to be full of pride and arrogance as the reason to publicize what we do. I think it's so important for other people to know what good is happening. It makes them feel better. It could also motivate other people to join and do that work together. So, you know, I don't believe in hiding your light under a bushel.
Sue, if someone was trying to decide how they were going to invest their money, what would the guidelines be that you would recommend?
There are, of course, the double bottom line is, again, the guidelines that I would want to share with somebody. That, of course, they have to support their family, they have to take care of college education, they have to take care of retirement, and people have those important needs. But money can also, while it's sitting in bonds or stocks or banks, can also be doing good. And so my advice is to think about both social return and financial return.
Do you feel that most Jews do that today?
I think there's still a make as much money as possible, and then you can give it away or you can do good things with it. And that's a legitimate position. I tend to believe that we can invest in ways that are ethical and also return good to the community at the same time.
Sue, how do people connect or invest in the Sheva Fund if that's what they wish to do?
The Sheva Fund is in Philadelphia, and we serve people all over the country. Our phone number is 215-483-4004, or you could find us on the web at www.shefafund.org.
I want to thank Sue Hoffman for a wonderful visit. You can get that information also, if you didn't catch it there, by emailing us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com. When we come back, we'll have a final musical playout and hear about next week's guest.
Temple Emanuel, the largest and fastest growing Reform congregation in Southern Arizona, invites you to become a part of all the wonderful ways we explore Judaism. Are you new in town? Call us for a tour and an information packet. Like to know more about Judaism? From an outstanding preschool program and excellent Reform religious school to the finest adult education academy in the country, Temple Emanuel offers contemporary Jewish learning with depth, authenticity, and creativity. Try our outreach classes and our hugely popular Taste of Judaism series. And if you're looking for the best Jewish music in town, this is the place. From our string quartet to our Avanim rock band, we include every variety of outstanding Jewish music available. Most importantly, we make Judaism fun and meaningful. Come join us at Temple Emanuel, 225 North Country Club Road, Arizona's first congregation and the only full-service Reform congregation in Tucson. Call 327-4501 today. Thank you for joining us this morning on Too Jewish with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends. You can contact us at 327-4501 or at twojewishradio@yahoo.com. Come back next Sunday at 10, right here on 990 AM KTKT.
Thanks for being here. Join us next week when our guest will be the terrific Israeli singer-songwriter Rami Kleinstein. Our playout this morning comes from cantor David Dudu Fischer, appropriate to these last days of 2003 and the beginning of 2004, Shana Tova, a good new year. This Friday at Temple, we'll have Tot Kabbalat Shabbat at 6:15, with dinner beforehand at 5:30, and our regular Shabbat services at 7:30 p.m. Call 327-4501 for information about Temple Emmanuel. My friends, have a good morning and a Shavua Tov, a week, we pray, of peace.
Shana Tova, Shana Tova, Ba'anava Rabba Hine Kreva, Tavislicha, Gam Ahava, Tavipius, Vegam Shalva, Yamim Holchi. Yamim ba'im, silchi gam at lachataim, rapi cholim, simchi noflim, bechesed uverachamim, shana tova.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.